Welcome to the Groovy Uncle Podcast with me, Glenn Pranger. The Groovy Uncle Podcast takes a look at the creative output of a prolific bunch of musicians and artists based in the Medway towns. Each week, I'll be catching up with some friends, old and new, to talk about what projects they've been involved in over the years and what they're doing now.
You're listening to the Groovy Uncle Podcast.
So let's dive into the soup of groovy uncleness. This week, my guest is artist and musician Daryl Hartley. Not only is he the man whose artwork and caricatures grace the covers of several Groovy Uncle albums and those of many other bands too, but he also happens to be a fine musician and songwriter as well. He wrote two songs, including the title track, which appear on the Groovy Uncle album Meanwhile Back in Medieval Britain, and has been an integral part of the Medway music scene for many years, playing with bands such as Disney Firetruck, Alvin Purple, Sergeant's Mess, and currently the Senior Service. Daryl, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
First question I always ask, how have you been in the last 18 months, nearly 2 years really, isn't it, since it all kicked off?
I've been okay. I mean, I think it's like with most people around the time, you know, the first few months, it was like, oh my God, this is the plague. This is like, you know, this is the four men of the four horsemen of the apocalypse sort of coming down, descending and all this kind of stuff. So the first few months, I think, and there was this kind of thing going on, you know, as this sort of virtual getting together type thing. I think it was quite scary for everybody, really, because I don't think many of us in our lifetime have experienced anything like that. But as time went on, I just thought, God, I haven't got to go and see people, isn't this great? Then you sort of get on with things. And I think, you know, as you well know, I mean, if you've got the means, And you're creative enough, you can probably sort of get by, and you do get by, and you find ways of sort of making the most of that sort of isolation.
Everyone sort of normalises it, you know, like you say, you start off feeling like it's the end of the world, and then suddenly it becomes, that's our routine now.
Yeah, it did become part of a routine. And I mean, I think like most people, we sort of did the Zoom quizzes and stuff, and which was really nice. It was a nice way to keep connected to people. And then after that, you think, do you know what? I'm just sick. Not only am I sick and tired of seeing my own stupid face, I'm sick and tired of seeing my own stupid little room behind me. and it just seems like such a weird, unnatural thing to do, to sort of actually talk to someone whilst looking at yourself. And even though, you know, you say, well, you don't look at yourself, do you engage with the person you're talking with? And you go, yeah, but you can't help but keep sneaking a peek at yourself to see, oh my God, is that what I look like when I'm being articulate or trying to be articulate? As far as that's concerned, that was good. That was really good. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I don't think we should dwell on this for too long, but I was really, really happy when we could go out and be a bit more normal again, I have to say, because I did get slightly cabin feverish. And as I say, even though I'm not, I'm a slight misanthrope, and it's good to get away from people, not the people I know and love, of course, but people generally, I just felt like, in the end, I was thinking, yeah, I don't particularly want to go out and mix these people, but it's nice to have the choice.
But you did get round to recording a new album.
The thing is, very much like yourself, Glenn, I actually really, really enjoy writing songs, have done for years and years and years. But unlike yourself, when it comes to, you know, because when you're writing a song, you know, you sort of kind of don't sing it properly, you're getting the melody in your head and stuff like that. But yeah, quite unlike yourself, when it comes to sort of actually sort of singing these things, I just end up turning around and go, oh, bollocks, I can't sing, can I? And so it's always a little bit of a struggle. And because of that, for me to actually produce something, I thought, okay, I could probably get away with that, because it was done really, really bare bones. I mean, I did it on GarageBand, which, as you know, is just the system software that comes with your Mac. And so it's not brilliant. So I just, you know, I've got a set of songs. They all kind of go together. They fit together as a kind of as a complete thing. So let's do it. And I really, really enjoyed the process, especially after about the 20th attempt trying to get harmony to sound in tune. That's the bit I preferred out of the whole experience.
Yeah, but isn't that part of, in a way, or isn't that part of the enjoyment? Because although it's frustrating if you're struggling to do something that's a bit outside of your comfort zone, but having that struggle can be quite...
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it's always... And I use loops and stuff that, you know, that came with the software. I mean, because I couldn't exactly smack away at a drum kit here because the neighbours... I mean, the neighbours sort of kind of banged on the ceiling a couple of times, actually, which, you know, which I don't blame them, because if, you know, it got to about 9 o'clock at night and you can hear some ungodly sound caterwauling from down below, then you're going to thump on the floor. But yeah, apart from that, I mean, as far as like the bass and the guitar and stuff, yeah, that was really, really enjoyable. But yeah, it was definitely when it came down to the vocals, I'm thinking, oh yeah, is that in tune enough? But because of the stuff I was listening to at the time, it had the influences I was listening to, you know, the vocals didn't need to be on the nose because the kind of music it suited, it didn't matter if it was slightly sort of squiffy. But ultimately, yeah, when I sort of put it all together, I just thought, actually, this isn't too bad. People do this Bandcamp thing. Let's just chuck it up there, see if anyone bites. And like I say, I mean, I'm putting myself down a bit, really. I mean, obviously, I haven't got the greatest voice, but with harmonies and stuff, it's a different kettle of fish. I think you can get away with a lot more with a lead vocal if you can put enough character in it. Apart from that, the process of it is really, really enjoyable, and I'm sure you can relate to this. I just love the process of recording. I just love building tracks and thinking of putting things on there, and can I put this on there and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. And what's the title of the album?
Chamber Music.
Social disease. So here comes X and he is angry with Y. It's not so much that
reason why I call it chamber music is, because it's like, you know, Glenn, you know, like the whole kind of the sort of concept of the bedroom boy. So it's, you know, like recording in your bedroom. If anyone's unsure of that, that's what it means. There's nothing more sort of salacious going on there. But the whole thing about recording in your bedroom is, well, in my spare room is recorded. So chamber, like as in bed chamber, you know, it was that. But the other thing about it was, as I was writing songs, and if I was to say anything about this, some of the lyrics I'm really, really happy with. And I was really pointing towards what's going on. Some of the songs really point towards what's going on social media and stuff like this. So the idea of like chamber as well was alluding to the whole idea of like an echo chamber, you know. So when you get into the point in social media, when everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got a point of view, but you know, if you're on social media with a certain amount of people who have swallowed the same point of view, or they've got the same opinion of something, then it is like it's the echo chamber. You're just effectively sort of voicing what everyone's saying. There's no debate there. People see something, they think it's like very virtuous, and they can't wait to say, look, I'm behind this cause and stuff like this. And you're thinking, well, okay, but what are you doing in the real world? It's that kind of thing. You know, there was this great television program, this documentary about Rupert Murdoch and effectively how he runs, politics in the UK, and not only just the UK, but everywhere, and how he was responsible almost for getting Tony Blair in, because Tony Blair played the game, and John Major, and I'll say it completely under my breath here, but a slightly newfound respect for John Major, even though I don't believe in his politics, you know, he was ousted because he didn't play the game of murder. He said, I don't want to get involved in this kind of this press thing. Blair did. So there's a great programme about that. So there's also a song there as well about how this press baron is effectively sort of steering the tide as far as, you know, politics is concerned. And also public opinion, as we know, the great British public are very, very easily pliable. They will sort of turn to whatever the newspapers are telling them. Certain newspapers, certain people will sort of go, oh yeah, if it says that, then it's really happening.
Well, that's the interesting thing again about social media, because although we know about how pliable people are, you see it in action on social media, didn't you? You see it happening.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so this is probably the last thing, it won't be actually, but sort of on a kind of political leaning, there was a show on the other night, and it was a documentary, and it was about Ashley Banjo, the guy from Diversity, and as you probably know, they did the routine last year, didn't they? With you know, about George Floyd, when they did the routine when he ends up with the knee on his neck, and there was a backlash, and you know, and everyone was saying, oh, this ruined my Saturday night tea time. Stick to dancing, and the whole of his documentary was that almost a lot of it was saying about how well, that in itself is, you know, shut up, don't talk about politics, you know, just get on and dance, do what you're good at. And you know, and then he interviewed Jim Davison, and Jim Davison, as we know, is a quite divisive character, shall we say. On social media, it had like this, what they call clickbait, you know, Jim Davison storms off of Ashley Banjo documentary and stuff. And then I read the comments, and they're all kind of vitriolic again. They were saying, oh, you know, Ashley Banjo's got ideas about his station, blah, blah, blah. And they'll stick to dancing. Obviously, the actual point of that programme was completely lost. So the whole programme was kind of moot, because the people who do watch it and understand it, it's a bit like the Murdoch thing I was talking about earlier, will... You're preaching to the converted, effectively, because I'd watch that program and say, yeah, of course Murdoch's running the bloody politics, but the people who should be watching that are probably watching Love Island or something. It, like you say, you can see it in action, you can see it happening. If you spend time, you shouldn't, and you really, really shouldn't, reading comments and things, it can drive you absolutely insane, because you think, what's the point? Bring on climate change.
Oh, a little bit of politics there, ladies and gentlemen.
One of the tracks, I think it's called Freak Show, which was, which I wrote in that kind of capital F small, because I thought I was being smart and clever. Because, again, lyrically, I really quite like the lyrics to it. I thought it came out, it was one of the ones that came along quite late when I was doing this thing, and I quite like the mood of it.
We're literally this, and we're literally that, and at the end of the day, that is a literal fact, and if it is what it is, and I really can't lie, I'd like to be an individual, and I really
Okay, so tell me, where did it all start?
The first band I was in was called Disney Fire Truck with my brother and a friend of ours called Craig. And, you know, it's like any other band to start, really. I think I must have been about 15, something like that. My brother, Paul, started playing guitar and he got together with Craig. He said, oh, you could play bass. And it's like any sort of band that starts up, you know, oh, you could play bass. What can you do musically? Nothing. Okay, you can play bass. No offense to bass players, because obviously I'm kind of one myself now. So it was, you know, they were a couple of years older than me, 17. And I thought, okay, I want to get involved in this. Maybe if I can play the paint pots, yeah, with a couple of drumsticks. And it was in the garage, and it was like, you know, classic garage band, you know, just making a little racket. And so, yeah, and then we got another guy in called Richard. And I remember a few people, you know, just a couple of years older than me, like yourself, Glenn, saying, oh, before I knew you, oh, there's this young bunch of upstarts playing at the Good Companions Club. They're supposed to be really good. Let's go and see them. So now I'm just thinking, we must be in that band. I think, oh, here we go. Here's this little bunch of twats. They think they've arrived, don't they? But I was drummer in that band, and I just loved it. Absolutely. I mean, the whole idea, when you're younger and you're drumming and you just, you know, and you sort of think you're Keith Moon or whatever, and just it was just like really, really good, and you know, and then we did have a little bit of following, and it was quite nice, and that sort of merged into Elvin Purple, or Elvin Blurple, as we sometimes been called. I was really interested in the idea of writing songs as well, so me and Paul, my brother, would sort of, he would be the main songwriter, but I quite like the idea of maybe chipping in every now and then, so the songs become a little more involved. I mean, when you first start, it's just like, you know, GFC and thrash it out, you know, and which is really, really good. But the song started to become a bit more sort of complex, a bit more involved. And for a three-piece, because Richard had left by then, we were kind of trying to write songs that were sort of almost like, you know, making the guitar and the bass sound like it should have been played on piano.
Sunny golden weather's here, lay back in the sun with an ice cold beer. Oh, sunny golden weather's cool, and I'll paddle my feet in a shallow pool. Oh, well, I really wouldn't wanna go anywhere in the world, cause I know it's sunny.
Sort of kind of fizzled out. We had one single came out, and which was quite a good experience.
So what happened to your brother? Does he still play?
No, he sort of doesn't really do any of that kind of thing anymore. He still picks up the guitar, but he did a few of his own songs when MySpace started, you know, and we were all on MySpace, weren't we? All uploading our songs, and he had a page on that, and we went down to Ranscombe Studios, Jim Riley's place, and he had a few songs, and we did them, and he's, you know, great songwriter, and he did about four songs down there, which I thought were really, really good. I played drums, but since then, no.
And after that came Sergeant's Mess.
I think it was because by this point I've got to know you guys, because I knew you and Alan and John Barker and of course Chris Hearsey as well, who was in Somersault amongst others, and then from Memphis, etc. Love Family at one point. That's the reason why let's do this. And obviously we call the band Sergeant's Mess. You're not saying we really want to make a go of this from the off, you know. It was like we'll get along, let's do something. And this is actually before I knew Simon or Wolf, so I didn't really know him actually before he was in the band, and he won't remember this, but I remember when, I think it's probably when we were in Disney Fire Truck or whatever we were called at the time, we played with you at Stanley Ballrooms or something, and I remember being quite intimidated by him because I asked if he could borrow his drum kit, and he was slightly off, and it seems really weird knowing him now that him to be like that. So when they were saying, oh, we'll get Simon in the band, I was going, I don't know, let's get Russ Baxter instead. You know, I know Russ, I know he's friendly. But of course, as soon as Simon got in, it was like that. And, you know, we all know what he's like, a bit of a twat. But we got on really well. That Sergeant's Mess. And again, we released one single, it was produced by Billy. No, we've released two now, haven't we? Because, sorry, Lee released one recently, Lee Grimmers. But at the time, yeah, that was just, you know, it was a real good laugh. Really, and it was really enjoyable being in that band, and that sort of lasted a few gigs or whatever, and that was that really. But yeah, again, that was really good because it was building up friendships with people and stuff like this, and you know, them sort of pretending they didn't hate me, which is always nice.
Now
PM, of course, then we did the Vanderbilts.
That was the one I was trying to think of, the Vanderbilts. Yeah, that was the other one.
Yeah, yeah, the Vanderbilts. Just, we kind of took a little more seriously. That was myself, John and Chris, and Alan came in to play bass. And again, I thought we had some pretty good songs there, actually. I really enjoyed that. That came next. But as you know, for all that kind of period, there's nothing like, you know, when you're younger, I'm in this band and we're going to make it. By this point, you're sort of doing that. And I think I was probably doing some stuff with you as well. So it was kind of, it all got a bit mishmashy and it was just all having a bit of a jolly old time, really.
And bringing things right up to date, you're currently with Senior Service.
And Senior Service, and again, well, we haven't done a lot recently. I say we haven't done a lot recently.
You've got a new record coming out, though.
Six-track EP. Yeah, but the depressingly, unironically named Senior Service is, yeah, myself, John, Simon, / Wolf, whatever camp you're in, and Graham. We started out about 6 years ago now, which is, whoa, bloody hell. Yeah, we're instrumental band, Hammond organ, John on Hammond, Graham on guitar, Simon on drums, myself on bass. And we've done two albums, a couple of singles. I'm really proud of, you know, the stuff we've done. Again, we went in and did some songs with vocals with Rachel Lowry. We approached her probably nearly 2 years ago, and it was when Kev Younger was doing his before it all went online. He was doing his thing down Social Club. You know, as you know, you took part, and we were a little bit drunk, and we were saying, "Oh, you know, instrumental stuff is great. We've done a couple of albums of instrumental stuff now. Mate, just do stuff with vocals." And Rachel was there, so we kind of drunkenly approached her and said, "Oh, we're going to do this." Well, John did anyway, and said, "Oh, we're thinking of doing this." And she goes, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to do it." So we came up with four songs. I think it's a couple of Graham's, one of John's, which Simon wrote some lyrics for, which are really, really good, and a song that I wrote. And so we waited all this time, obviously, because we couldn't do anything. We finally came around to recording it. Yeah, and it was really, really smart. The thing is, we got in there and did all the sort of backing tracks, and it's come together really, really well, really well. We've really done about one rehearsal with Rachel, and she came in, she nailed it effectively. Didn't take many takes to do it either, and it was kind of one of those moments where you're thinking, oh yeah, this is really, really good. So yeah, and that was that, and there's a couple of instrumentals on it, you know, just going back to our roots, you know, going back to the old days. You know, the old days we used to do just, you know, songs about words. Really, really happy that's come out, actually. Really happy. And I think that's coming out in January.
Let's talk a bit about your art as well, because I mentioned that in the intro. Have you always been interested in, you know, you're a good graphic designer, artist? Where did that all start?
I popped out with a Crayola in my hand, which made it quite tricky for my mother, but, you know, she got over it. Of course I've always loved drawing. I think kids always love drawing, don't they, anyway? I mean, and you stick at it or you don't. And the thing is with me, as far as I'm concerned, and I've applied this, and, you know, this isn't about you. This thing isn't about you, Glenn, but I'm going to talk about this. I've done quite a few of your record sleeves, and I've done the illustrations, etc. And I've sort of said this before, that I'm a bit of a slut when it comes to my illustrator. And I think, in a way, I think it's because I've been a graphic designer, which used to be known as a commercial artist, for so long. I sort of kind of, okay, so for instance, I did the first thing I did for you, let's do a Hanna-Barbera type sort of thing. Next thing I did for you is like, kind of like, oh, well, let's do something that's a bit like the Magical Mystery Tour cartoons, you know, in the Magical Mystery Tour booklet. And then it's, oh, well, let's do something that's a bit like Beano. So the reasons why I don't think I'll ever be successful illustrators, because I haven't got one specific style, but the reason why I think people always ask me to do something is because I think I'll do something in that sort of style. It's nice to be able to do stuff which is, for me, I mean, it's more interesting. You know, if I'm doing record sleeves and stuff, I find that really enjoyable. There's always been people come up to go, oh, can you draw me this? Can you draw me that? Can you draw me this? I'll be like, okay. And then I went to art college. Okay, I'm going to do a graphic design illustration course. That won't happen here. And about a week in, people are going, you can draw this for us, could you? For fuck's sake, I'm at art college. where do I have to go where people are asking to draw something for them? So, yeah, so I've been responsible for quite a few designs, you know, not quite up to the Bruce Brand kind of level yet, you know.
The Bruce Brand brand.
Bruce Brand branding, you know. I mean, he's definitely got a sort of kind of coffee table book's worth of, sort of material you could put down. I might have like a sort of, okay, size of the Radio Times. But, yeah, so I've done quite a few covers now, quite a few midway acts, artists, bands. And, yeah, it's something I've sort of, I do enjoy doing, yeah.
And you've come up with some terrific illustrations for Groovy Uncle albums. I mean, particularly One Vowel, that Hanna-Barbera type thing, which was just brilliant.
Yeah. Well, what made it easier, that, I mean, that, you know, the band that you had at the time, which you had for quite a while, I suppose, which was Bruce and Mull and Nick and yourself, you can make them into characters quite easily.
Yeah, and I think Mole is probably the most striking character.
Absolutely.
You know, he looks like a cartoon character anyway, doesn't he?
I'm sure he won't mind you saying that.
I've said it to him many times.
I think I've drawn Mole quite a few times now, for yourself and for Alan as well, because, of course, he was in Gallo 7 as well, Mole. So I've sort of done covers for them where he's been immortalised in cartoon form. The artwork I do for Senior Service, it's all kind of sort of based on that Saul Bass stuff. You know, obviously Saul Bass, who did the movie posters for Hitchcock, you know, really love his stuff.
Let's go back to your childhood.
What's your earliest musical memory?
I sort of kind of grew up with a kind of a bit of a mixture of stuff. If I was to pick on stuff that my dad listened to and sort of big him up a little bit and sort of try and make him sound a bit cool, was that he was really into Bob Dylan and Kate Bush, as far as I can remember, a bit later in the 70s. Whereas my mum would listen to Johnny Mathis constantly, loud, on a Sunday, whilst ironing. So my earliest memories are definitely these kind of crooners sort of blasting out, you know. And my mum was just absolutely in love with Johnny Mathis, which I think probably a lot of women of that era were. that sort of silky smooth sort of, there's a couple of songs specifically Tony Mappa's saying. That's why, you know, I really enjoy, you know, like what the Divine Comedy did and stuff. I really like strings and stuff like this, and almost like those kind of very sort of croony type stuff. But at the same time, that kind of quirkiness of Kate Bush, I quite like that sort of kind of quirkiness in music as well. I sort of take the piss out of my dad a little bit, really, because he sort of, you know, he said, I used to have all the Beatles albums. And I was thinking, yeah, well, you had a couple of Beatles albums in your collection. You know, you might have had a sort of Sergeant Pepper, which was like borrowed off someone. when we say, well, what happened to all your records then? He'd always say, oh, yeah, you kids broke them up to make plectrums, which is kind of a bit sort of rock and roll sort of anecdote in a way. Oh, yeah, I was so cool. What did you do? I just busted up my Beatles albums to make plectrums because I was so rock and roll, you know, and play some Sex Pistols. Like many of us, you know, the Beatles really sort of are there. You know, it's omnipresent, it's always there, do you know what I mean? And I can't actually remember really sort of first getting into them, for instance, apart from the fact I remember listening to Abbey Road and thinking, oh, this is really, really, really good. And then She's So Heavy coming on and that kind of play out with the white noise and stuff, and sort of kind of a bit open mouth and thinking, bloody hell, I didn't know they did this kind of stuff. So my earliest sort of memory of that is listening to that and then flipping it over and then going, fuck me, did I do Here Comes the Sun? Because it's always there. You think, you know, it's one of those kind of songs, they're sort of subconsciously there. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, obviously the Beatles, but I was kind of listening to a lot of sort of, you know, sort of that 80s indie scene.
And then I guess the Lars came along, didn't they? And you know, in that kind of pre-Britpop period. And
they made that one really, really good album. But, you know, before then it was... obscure indie music, you know, stuff that probably only sold 100 copies, you know, kind of thing. And then a little bit later, discovering the Kinks and really, really loving that. A massive, massive inspiration on when we did the band earlier on, the Album Purple Band. I mean, I love a lot of music that some people I know probably sort of go, oh, really? You know, things like Radiohead and stuff. Like, I mean, I absolutely love Radiohead now. And again, because I really absolutely love pop music, but you go so far with pop music and it starts thinking, oh yeah, I've kind of heard this kind of thing before. Hmm. And I like to sort of seek out stuff that might be a little bit different, influences from other places. Hmm. And I like bands, and I really love Beck as well. I like bands and artists that take bits from other places, you know what I mean? Whether it be sort of electronic or whatever. And then again, like Damon Albarn, you know, I think he's really, really interesting in what he's doing with, you know, he brings in music from different places and stuff like that. I love that idea, and I sort of kind of, when I did my own recording and stuff, I think, oh, okay, let's try and do something a bit different. And I just love that kind of thing, experimenting a bit of music. It keeps it exciting for me. You know, there's some hip-hop I like. There's Billie Eilish, I've heard some of that, and not Billie Childish, I may add, Billie Eilish. And I've heard a couple of those things, and you know, I think it's quite interesting as well. And again, it's very easy to say that. So, oh, no, I don't want the kids, but I sort of genuinely mean it. If someone's doing something, even if it's not musically, I think that's all right. If there's something interesting about it, as you get older with things like Frank Sinatra, you think, I understand, I get it, why he was so successful. Not necessarily because of the voice or whatever, but the charisma and everything that goes with it. Like Elvis as well, you know, I'm not a massive Elvis fan, but I get it.
This or that. Okay, here we go. Sun or moon?
Moon.
Full fat or semi-skimmed?
Semi-skimmed.
Fate or free will?
Free will.
T-Rex or Slade?
T-Rex.
Margate or Ramsgate?
Margate.
Sam and Dave or Chaz and Dave?
Chaz and Dave. Obvs.
A drink by the pool or a flask and a view?
Flask and a view.
The Steve Miller Band or Ed Miliband?
I've never seen Steve Miller eat a bacon sandwich in a silly way, but he is a bit of a joker. Well, Steve Miller Band.
Sean Connery or Roger Moore?
Sean Connery.
Drought or flood?
Flood.
God or no God?
No God.
Yesterday or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Top Gear or Top Cat?
Top Cat.
Correct answers, well done. Okay, so tell me, when is this 6-track, 10-inch vinyl record by the Senior Service going to be released?
January, I believe. That's what last we heard. The artwork's done, it's all recorded, it's all gone off. So, like I say, it's at the mercy of when actual production is available. So, yeah, that's looking forward to that. We've also got a single coming out on Spin Out Nuggets as well, which is Lee Grimshaw's label, ever so prolific Lee, who seems to release a record every... he's probably released about 6 whilst we've been doing this. We've got a live record coming out through that. That's a 7-inch single. Not sure when that's coming out because I know he gets lots of stuff going on, so I'm unsure of that one. But yeah, the EP's January, I believe.
Great stuff. I really look forward to that. So all that leaves me to say right now is have a very happy birthday on Christmas Eve and have a great Christmas. Merry Christmas, mate. Cheers for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me, Glenn. It's lovely to see you.
And you. Cheers. See you soon.
See you later. Goodbye. It's what you do.
Thank you for listening to my podcast and I hope you enjoyed it. Why not join me next time when I'll be catching up with another musical guest who'll be giving a fascinating insight into a varied and creative life.